From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 31st day of August, 2021. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you from the Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois. Coming up in this half hour, we will talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. The brand new meteorologist from DTN will join us to take a look at the weather forecast. We'll hear from an alum at the University of Illinois and talk about farm safety as well. All on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, September corn today at $5.34 a bushel. That was down 6.25. December at $5.34 1/4, 8.5 lower. In the March at $5.42 3/4, down 8 cents. September beans at $12.98 3/4, 6 lower. November at $12.92 1/2, down 10 3/4. And January futures finished at $13.25, down 9.5 for the day. The bean meal at $3.46.40, down $1.20. The bean oil at $59.36, 92 cents lower on the afternoon. December hard red, rather soft red winter wheat at $7.22 1/4, down 1¢ 1/4. And the hard red at $7.05 1/4, 1¢ higher for the afternoon. Live cattle future, the nearby contract, October at $126.90. That for 100 pounds, that finished $1.42 1/2 lower on the day. The feeders at $167.75. Down $1.20 in lean hogs at $88.80, down $1.35 for the afternoon. Crude oil for the day finished the nearby contract at $68.30 a barrel. That's actually still trading down about 82 cents U.S. Diesel fuel or heating oil at $2.12 8/10, just about unchanged on the day. And the gasoline down 1¢ 3/10 at $2.14 a gallon. That's the wholesale price for the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 35,319, 33 points lower, and the U.S. dollar at 92.635 is down 0.017 for the day. Hey, don't forget to come visit us at the University of Illinois tent here on the Farm Progress Show site. It was a great day today. We're looking for a better day even tomorrow because the weather will be a little more conducive, although, well, we've got a breeze today and it's not too warm, a little sunshine. Fantastic day and a really nice crowd here. Actually, a pretty good-sized crowd for a Tuesday at the Farm Progress Show in Decatur. The University of Illinois tent is located at the corner of 3rd and West Streets, just inside the gates. We're now joined by Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, to discuss what happened in the marketplace today. Thank you, Wayne, for taking the time with us today. Let's start out with just what happened in the market and some of the reasons behind it.
Well, you know, it was sort of a red day today for us and most everything. A lot of that being caused by Storm Ida. I mean, lots and lots of damage and lots of craziness up and down the river, and not the unknown of what's going to happen and how long it's going to take to get things back to going again. And so today was a big risk-off day by the funds, just saying we hate, you know, indecision, not knowing what's happening. And they liquidated quite a few contracts of corn, beans, and wheat today because of that.
What do we know about the damage that has taken place?
Well, you know, there's extensive damage, especially at the Cargill elevator, a lot of stuff down that way. One of the biggest things that was repeated on four or five of the different commentaries and newswires was, when will electricity be back up so the workers can come back into the area, into their homes? You know, if we don't have anybody to run it or repair the thing for a while because everybody's electricity is down, well, that sort of slows repairs also. So that's one thing. I mean, we know that there's a big leg down and a big belt down at Cargill. It's going to take, could take up to 6 months, but at least 10 days before they could be possibly even operational. Their other elevators are trying to assess what's doing on. But the big thing is going to be, number one, is electricity in the area, and then seeing what they have once they get into it, because there's no electricity to go in and test what will or won't work at this point right now. So we're at least probably a week to 10 days before we see anything being loaded there. We also are looking here, and we saw the bids in Memphis. Their bids yesterday showed a premium being paid for all grains over the board of trade for their fall prices. They went back to zero premium over the board today and put very tight restrictions on moisture and damage on their crops coming in for right now, too. So we're seeing a lot of protection being taken along the river because of the uncertainty.
Yeah, so given that, I did see a photo of three Panamax vehicles and ships that
big boats,
and they apparently drug their anchors along the Mississippi River and then crashed into each other. It's not clear what'll happen to them. So there's just an incredible amount of damage. As you said, the export market may be closed for up to 10 days. The cargo, not only the cargo elevator, but maybe all of them. That puts us, you know, we're not, well, we didn't make USDA's numbers for export. That'll go on the books that way. What does it mean for the marketplace over the longer term?
Well, we will lose the amount of exports, you know, just that we could ship out here to for early harvest that way out of the Gulf. Now, remember, our other ports are still open. They can still go out of the Pacific Northwest, out of the lakes and everything like that. But, you know, our main export area, you know, for grains is out of the Mississippi Gulf down there. So, you know, it's just going to slow things down. It's going to make things very hesitant, you know, for buyers and users like that. You know, some firms are saying, hey, this is a chance on this sell-off for end users to take advantage and buy something a little cheaper. Other people here are, you know, just saying this could cost us, you know, 5 or 10 days worth of exports, and that will maybe cut down on what will the government will say our exports will be for the year, because we like to export quick here, get take over the export market from South America at this point in time.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Well, we're here at the Farm Progress Show, and this morning the governor of the state of Illinois, J.B. Pritzker, made an announcement about some grants and monies that were available for farm health and mental safety. Of course, the University of Illinois, along with the North Central region across the 12 states in extension from North Dakota to Ohio, are all involved in mental health. It's centered, actually, here on campus at the University of Illinois. Of course, we're at the Farm Progress Show in Decatur, but on campus. There is a website called farmstress.org. Courtney Cuthbertson is with us, along with Josie Rodolfi, to talk a little bit about the announcement this morning and what kinds of services and why they are available to farmers. I think, Courtney, I'll start with you. Tell me a little bit about farmstress.org and the whole of the Midwest and what the goal is.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much for the opportunity to share with you. We're thrilled about the announcement today for some additional funding to go towards farm stress programs. And our farmstress.org website is a clearinghouse of resources that can help people in agriculture to manage stress and mental health and find help when they are looking for resources that might be about other people. Maybe it's fact sheets or phone lines, someone to be able to talk to when they're having a hard time. Our goal through the North Central Farm and Ranch Stress Assistance Center is to make these resources available to producers and agricultural advocates in the Midwest region. So we're very happy to be able to collaborate with Cooperative Extension in all of those states, as well as Southern Illinois University School of Medicine through the Farm Family Resource Initiative. And with the additional funding that was just announced this morning, we are looking forward to being able to form a voucher program so that producers have free access to behavioral health professionals.
What will that entail?
That will entail the voucher program means that people would be able to get three vouchers at a time to be able to get linked up with a professional behavioral health counselor. Maybe that's a social worker, a psychologist, licensed professional counselor, and within their area, either for in-person services, as it's safe to do so through COVID-19, or through telemedicine, telehealth, and opportunities to connect that way.
Josie Rodolfi is here as well. Josie, tell me a little bit about the work you do and where you're located here at the Farm Progress Show in case people want to catch up with you.
Absolutely. So the North Central Farm and Ranch Stress Assistance Center has a booth in the Health and Safety Tent. That's in spot 1125. We invite you to pop in. We have a lot of handouts. We have some opportunities for engagement. We, of course, have a number of resources, and we can help connect you to some services if that's something that interests you. So do stop in, and we look forward to seeing you.
What's the hardest thing as it relates to mental health for farmers to have to deal with it? Is it just admitting and trying to find some help, or are there other things that are involved in the process?
That's a really good question. We talk about some of the barriers that farmers experience to accessing mental health services in their area. They relate to things like accessibility. We live in areas where there may be medical health care shortages, and the types of professionals that they need just aren't available. With that, there are things like affordability. So if they are available, does insurance cover this type of care? And we know that farmers are really good at scrutinizing their bottom line, and they have to justify every single expense.
Producers are such analytical people and really pride themselves on being able to solve problems and figure things out. And if this is not working, how can I make it work? How can I fix something and make it do better than it did before? And a lot of times that means, how can I do this on my own? And with things like a tractor or things like beef cattle, you're willing to call in a specialist to help you. And with mental health, we don't see the same thing. And sometimes this is because of perceptions that neighbors are going to judge me, or they're going to be talking about me behind my back. And I think stigma is one of the biggest barriers to people being able to reach out and ask for help. But what I would want people to know is that asking for help is actually a huge sign of strength, and that it's okay to feel better. It's okay to get help. All of us have mental health all the time. It's not just poor mental health, but some of us have good mental health or kind of okay mental health. And the kinds of supports we need are going to be different depending on where our mental health is on a given day or in a given moment. So we have a lot of things available to be able to help.
This is a bit of an analytical question, but it's a geographically based. Can you see across the 12 states where stress is at a hot point for some reason, and what is the cause of that? And then how is the response from farmstress.org and other organizations put forth to try to meet that stress need?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a really important time for agriculture in the Midwest right now. We're preparing for harvest. We want that to be as productive and safe as possible. We know there have been some areas of the region who've experienced a lot of rainfall, in some instances flooding, especially early in the growing season. But we also know that there is a chunk of the upper Midwest who is experiencing extreme drought. So what we try to do is make sure that the producers in those areas have resources and services at their disposal. We know that those are the areas where we need to be pushing the Iowa Concern Hotline. It's a hotline that's available to anybody in our 12-state region. We're able to see then how calls come in and where we need to continue to target some of those efforts. So we know that everyone's dealing with COVID-19. We will continue to deal with that. We know that's created stressors for farmers. And so the North Central Farm and Ranch Stress Assistance Center is working to put out resources, fact sheets, and services for producers as they navigate the changing situation of COVID-19.
Josie Rudolphy, Courtney Cuthbertson, thank you so much for joining us. Have a good time here at the Farm Progress Show, and thank you for operating farmstress.org. You know, at the Farm Progress Show, lots of folks stroll through the University of Illinois tent. Sure hope you will, too. It's not hard to find when you come in the main gate. Turn to your right, you'll see those big Illinois flags blowing about a block away. We're at the corner of 3rd and West Street. Come and visit us all 3 days at the Farm Progress Show. Bob Ray is in the tent now. He's the CEO of Illinois FBFM and a tax specialist. Thank you so much for being with us. I've worked with you over the years at the Illinois Farm Tax School from time to time. I know you do keep up on policy changes. What's happening in Washington, D.C. at this point?
There are a couple of proposals that might affect farm families. One of those is called the STEP Act. One of those is called the For the 2% Act. Both of those are driven by the Democrats who are leading the caucuses, of course. They are driving towards higher estate tax rates, number one, and number two, eliminating some of the exemptions that we've had that would have another indirect method of increasing taxes on farm families when estates arise.
If they were to go through as the policies are being developed now, what would it mean?
A couple of pieces. Right now, farm families benefit from a thing we call stepped-up basis, which means we reset the tax value of farm assets and allow the heirs to sell those assets at a smaller gain, or the heirs to depreciate those assets again. That stepped-up basis provision is one that's targeted for elimination to some degree. The other piece is to treat transfers at death the same as transfers during lifetime and cause those to be treated essentially as a sale instead of as a inheritance.
Turning to 2020 taxes, I want to review some things that I did on my personal taxes with you that farmers will want to know about. I'm going to guess they did this right. I did not declare PPP, which I was able to collect from the last year. Should I have?
No, they decided in December 27th of 20, very late in the year, that PPP proceeds would in fact be non-taxable and would have no negative income tax implication in a variety of ways. So very welcome news, but a non-taxable economic stimulus benefit.
And that was not only for farms, but for all those who put a PPP application in and collected from that particular program.
Exactly right. No PPP loan limitation, no industry limitation, all PPP proceeds non-taxable.
Was I supposed to declare the MFP payment?
The MFP payment, like all types of FSA payments, are fully taxable. There were no exemptions allowed for those. There was talk of that, but none of that materialized. So any type of FSA payment is always going to be fully taxable.
Yeah, that's good. I don't have to amend my 2020 taxes.
Yeah, there you go.
What should I do about 2021, or should farmers in general think about for the coming year, or for this year, I mean?
2021, one of the key pieces that's happening right now as we sit here near the middle point of the third quarter is a thing called employee retention credit. For our farmers that have employees, they're able to obtain a very beneficial payroll tax credit for hiring people to work on their farm in 2021. As a quick example, if you paid an employee $10,000 of wages, the IRS provides a $7,000 payroll tax credit if you're otherwise eligible to obtain that credit.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Very good. Nice to see you, Todd.
That's Bob Ray. He is the CEO of Illinois FBFM, the farm business, farm management system. But you know, you never know who you'll run into at the Farm Progress Show. An alum of the University of Illinois joins us. Graduated in what year, Jerry Brockett?
2019.
So Jerry Brockett is a 2019 graduate, and he has a tremendous story to tell about the FFA classes, ag classes as well, that he has created at Meridian High School. Tell me where this is and how big the high school is.
So Meridian High School is in Macon, Illinois, so about 10 minutes south of Decatur, and there's about 300 students in the entire high school.
No ag classes prior to the time you showed up?
Yep, I showed up in 2019. We started our first ever ag classes group of kids, and since then we've added a few different classes and expanded student numbers there as well.
And how many kids are in those classes now?
So 2019, we had about 60 kids with 20 FFA members. Now we're up to about 81 kids and 55 FFA members.
That's an amazing number. I assume the rest of the teachers in the school are just jealous that you dropped in and 2 years later you have 81 kids in the classes.
Yeah, it's been nice. You just have the general other clubs that would love more kids, but they don't hold any grudges. They're supportive of us. They buy our T-shirts, buy from our students from fundraisers, and overall just very good cheerleaders for me and the rest of the school.
So clearly, if you have 81 kids in these programs, they're not all from the farm. Tell me what kind of things that they're interested in and what you're teaching.
So in my classes, I don't just teach straight up, here's how to be a farmer, like some people may think. I like to make sure that any of my kids can come out of classes with some sort of consumer or life skill. So for example, in poultry, you learn all about like judging poultry products, eggs, live chickens, dead chickens. I want them to be able to choose proper poultry products at a store that is safe for them and their family. As well, in some of my intro classes, we do things like soil judging or forestry. So it's a skill they can take with them, like being able to identify certain trees or judge whether a specific place is good for a home or for anything else for that matter.
I imagine when you started this, you have to have some community support of some kind.
Yeah, so to start the program, we did have a ag foundation that was very proactive in getting it started and trying to get it to school. And they're like a group of pretty good 15 to 20 guys and gals that whenever I ask for something, they don't hesitate. They say, when do you need it and how much? And so I've been very fortunate in where I've been. That helps not too far away.
Well, congratulations, and I know the university is really proud to have you as an alum.
Thank you so much.
Jerry Brockett is the ag teacher at Meridian High School in Macon, Illinois. We joined him here at the Farm Progress Show. Amazing things come out of campus. Well, it's time to check the weather forecast, and we're not too far from the DTN building here on the Farm Progress Show site. We're at the corner, of course, West and 3rd, and just around the corner on 3rd Street from us is the DTN building, and they have a meteorologist on board. John Baranek is with us this afternoon to talk a little bit about the weather forecast. He's been telling producers here and others at the Farm Progress Show about La Nina and maybe, oh, a double dip La Nina. What do you mean by that, John?
Yeah, hi, thanks, Todd. Really what we're looking at is we had a La Nina event last fall, kind of moving into the winter. Came out of it in the spring, but it looks like we're headed back to another one here this fall and over the winter as well. So that's not atypical. That actually happens quite often where we get a second La Nina after the first one. And we're talking about how that's going to impact how we get out of drought in the Western Corn Belt, what that means for rainfall in the Eastern Corn Belt, and how we might recover over the winter.
Short version, what does it mean?
Short version, we don't see a whole lot of change, unfortunately. So the Western Corn Belt looks like it'll probably stay on the dry side going all the way through winter. The Eastern Corn Belt has a better chance of seeing some above normal precipitation.
Farmers would also like to know whether it's on that dry side, whether they're going to be able to get in the field. They'll be worried about frost, especially in the western part of the Corn Belt, where they have planted really pretty long hybrids, long maturity hybrids, and they'll need to avoid that. They didn't do it last year. I think it was October the 12th last year when that hit. They had an issue with that. So what do you see about cold temperatures in the fall time frame? And then I'd kind of like to talk about the weather forecast for the next few days, too.
Sure. So over the course of the fall, especially in the Western Corn Belt, we're expecting temperatures to be above normal all the way through November. That does not mean that we cannot have an early frost. It just means that the likelihood of that occurring is pretty low.
And what do you see for the weather forecast here in Decatur at the Farm Progress Show for the three-day event?
Well, we may still get some showers yet this afternoon. It's kind of a low chance, but they could pop up at any time here. Otherwise, we're pretty dry and pretty comfortable temperatures, too, for this time of the year. So we're looking at sunny skies for Wednesday and Thursday, and temperatures right around 80.
And before I let you go, when are you up making your presentations in the DTN building?
Yep, so me and Todd Holtman are both speaking together at the DTN booth here at 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. all 3 days.
Come and visit with John Baranek if you'd like. He's in the DTN building. When you're done with him at 10 a.m. and 2 p.m., drop over to the University of Illinois tent. We'll be glad to talk with you there as well.